It's the penultimate pod before the season starts. A week on from our worries, we are all set on Haaland. We're looking a lot at Liverpool. We have fun with the fixtures and Jules' Olympic practice continues. Hello, welcome back to the FPL pod. Whether you're listening via podcast or watching us on YouTube, it's great to be back gearing up for what is becoming a rapidly appearing round the corner FPL season. As always, Sam Bonfield and Julian Laurent are here. Sam, it's right now the busiest time in your whole year, basically.
Yeah,
I was thinking about it, that your kids are off school, it's kids' holidays, and it's the start of FPL. I just think this must be like everything kind of crescendoing for you.
Yeah, it'd be nice to go to bed at some point. That would be nice. If I could get some sleep at some stage, that would be really nice. It's really busy. And then the first match will kick off and then everything will settle down into a nice little routine. But yeah, at the moment, it is crazy busy. But I love that. That's the best bit, really.
Yeah, and I like this bit because it's the anticipation. It's the belief that we can all still win FPL in a couple of weeks. We'll all know we can't win FPL. Well, someone can, of course, but I don't think it'll be any of us. Jules, your swimming went down an absolute treat on YouTube.
We
even got a couple of listeners actually saying that they went from listening to it on the podcast to going onto YouTube just because they had to see those master strokes.
Exactly.
I thought it looked a bit more like you were drowning, but what have you got?
That's
coming
not
for
true.
Today?
And I clearly inspired the French team and Léon Marchand to win all his gold medals. You know, I was there all along, all the time. It was brilliant. And now I've got athletics tonight, for example. So at the end of the show, I will do a few of my athletics moves.
Oh, goodness.
Can't wait to see which discipline.
I'm a great athlete. I run fast. I jump high and far, everything.
I'd question Kehin Daniel, who commented saying that he came from the podcast to watch on YouTube, and he said, "I wasn't disappointed. Swims like a true Olympian.
Thank
legend.
You very much. Like a fish in water. Thank you. What's his name?
I can't quite work it out from his YouTube name, but his YouTube name is Kehind Daniel 7596. Yeah, I'm guessing his name is Daniel. Thanks for coming and giving us another view on YouTube. I've got to be honest, this whole YouTube thing is great, but it means like this morning, I'm just going to be honest because Jules will say it if I don't. I was eating my breakfast just before we came on. Jules is saying, are you going to be on YouTube with your breakfast in your teeth? So the commitment we're showing to you guys, don't worry, there's no breakfast in my teeth. Jules, thanks. Jules, anyway, you are at the Olympics, which does include some football. So have you been keeping across, firstly, the Olympics football and also pre-season in general?
Exactly. Kelly, and we start with the Olympics, as you mentioned, because Jean-Philippe Mateta has been an absolute star for France in the quarterfinal and semifinal. He scored 3 goals in those 2 games. If you want to put him in your squad, no problem. The only thing is, he will very likely miss the start of the season because he will need a bit of holidays after this. We know, for example, that Alexandre Lacazette and Lyon expected him to play in the second game of the season. So for Mateta, it might be a bit similar, but he's on top form for sure. And the final is on Friday now. And there's also a lot of friendlies going on everywhere. Chelsea last night lost to Real Madrid 2-1. But they played much better and we saw another goal from Madueke. So that's 2-2 for him. Before that, they lost to Manchester City quite heavily though, 4-2 after being 4-0 down, where we saw Erling Haaland with a hat-trick. We saw another goal from Oscar Bob. Remember, we mentioned him last week. Liverpool were really good in their 2 games against Arsenal. They won 2-1 against Manchester United. They won 3-0. Harvey Elliott, very good against Arsenal. Curtis Jones, very good against United. That's one to keep in mind. We saw Pedro Porro scoring again for Spurs. Sorry, Sam, they lost to Bayern Munich. And also, let's not forget all the new signings in the Premier League, the likes of Smith Rowe and Fulkrug and Jorgensen and Somerville and all of that we can mention later.
And I've got to be honest, Sam said she's not sleeping. When the heck are you sleeping? Because
no, but like, you know, you come back
everything.
Still buzzing from the Olympics, so then you struggle to sleep a little bit, so then you can watch a bit more football. There's always time for football.
Sam, I did think of you when Pedro Porro scored, because I know he's kind of on your watch list. You're a Spurs fan as well. But what else has kind of made your ears prick up when you've been listening out what's been happening in pre-season?
There's a lot of rumours at the moment, aren't there? And I think it's difficult because obviously this point of the season, you hear a lot of transfer stuff going on and it's trying to work out whether, because what you don't want to do is have a rumour that then ends up coming to something serious and you need to then find that the player that you've got in your team is the one that then misses out. But yeah, there's been a lot of kind of stuff happening in the press we'll keep an eye on and see what happens over the coming weeks. But I think it was the Haaland goal that changed the whole FPL community, didn't it, really? Because there was lots of divisiveness in terms of who was having him, who wasn't having him, why you wouldn't have him, why you would have him. And the Chelsea fixture in game week one, the fact that it's away, I think was putting a lot of people, it was their excuse, I think, to go without Haaland. And then, of course, he goes and bangs a hat-trick against them in pre-season.
Also, it goes back to what we said, this time last week, a week ago, we were saying how quickly things can change in pre-season. Yeah. Weren't we talking about his injury last week and being worried? And I think, Jules, you were the one that said to me, oh, don't be silly, don't worry.
Let's see, yeah.
It doesn't matter. And yeah, it's amazing how much can change in a week. Jules, what do you think his ownership is at the moment?
So I would say, last time was around 34%, wasn't it, last week when we did the show?
I suspect
with the goals now and the fact that he looked, I mean, maybe he's still struggling a little bit with a niggle or two, like Pep said, but he looked pretty sharp to me, especially in that first half against Chelsea. So I would say maybe around the 45% now.
Not quite. It's 40.2% at the time of recording. This is on Wednesday morning when we're speaking. But
so still more managers without him than with him.
Mm. Yeah, but it is going up. So we were expecting it to go up even more, I'm guessing, Jules. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, as you know, I would not have him. I think it's a massive risk. I know he's expensive more than ever. And I know if you decide to go with him, it means that you need to adapt the rest of your budget for the players that you might want. So we said, if you want Salah and Haaland, then it's difficult. If you don't have Haaland, you can have Salah and some really good players around him. So I get that. But I think it's a massive risk not to have Haaland, because he's been on great form this summer. We said he had no international football in the summer at all, so he'd been able to go to Norway on holidays, do all the things that Norwegians do, you know, like cutting wood and stuff and fishing salmon, I guess. And obviously being ready and super sharp now.
Should we make a generalization at this point?
No. I'm just saying, on his Instagram, he said, I love Norway. You
coffee,
see him cutting.
Yeah. Eat snails. Yeah.
No, I know we do that too. I'm just saying, I went through his holiday on his Instagram, and that's a lot of things that he did. So that, I guess that's what people in Norway do.
Okay, disclaimer, I don't actually think that about French people, by the way. Sam, in general, it's an interesting trend, actually, isn't it? I know it's something that you've noticed as well. Managers don't quite seem to know what to do with the expensive assets. And it goes back to the whole point of the fact that the big premium players are priced so interestingly. Mm. None of them are that highly owned at the moment. It seems like people are just kind of still not quite sure what to do.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the case. I was chatting to FPL Focal Oscar at the beginning of the week, and we were talking about the game week one ownerships from last season and what they look like. And it's really fascinating, because I think the game week one ownerships that we have currently, a lot of them are the auto picks. So, you know, when you just select a team quickly because you want to get a good team ID and you auto pick your squad in, a lot of them that are still highly owned were in those auto pick teams. So I wonder if there's some managers that have auto picked and then haven't come back and fully set up their team for the season yet. That might change the ownership figures. But also, when you look at last season heading into game week one, now by the time we hit game week two, Haaland's ownership was at 92%, but going into game week one, it was at 89%. So we are like under half the ownership that he had last time around, which is also a bit mad. And then last year, there was only three other players that were owned really highly. So one of them was Saka, who was owned by 60% of the game. And then we had Estupiñán, who was owned by 54%. And Marcus Rashford, who was owned by 51%. And when you look at that in comparison to this season, we're seeing a lot more spread across the most popular players. And I think that's because people are either choosing to go without Salah or they're choosing to go without Haaland. And because of that, we're seeing like a number of players that are sitting in around the 40 to 50% ownership. So it'll be interesting to see how this season pans out, really, because obviously the higher the ownership, the more that's going to hurt you if you don't have them in your team. And there's more players to worry about this season that are going to be more heavily owned, although they won't have the explosive, absolutely catastrophic impact that not having Haaland would have had last season. So, yeah, fascinating. And I think the fact that it's Isak and Watkins and Cole Palmer that are leading the way in terms of the most heavily owned is interesting too, because they are significantly cheaper than our most premium players.
Okay, about 7 or 8 minutes into this podcast. I think it's time we gave an update on our drafts. I've found this week particularly scary because since last week's podcast, I can't get off my mind that I haven't got a Liverpool player. I can't get Mo Salah off my mind, but more worryingly, I can't get him into my team. So at the moment, I don't have him, but I know that I'm probably going to need to find a way. So over the next week, I'm going to kind of be downgrading and playing around to try and get him in. So I'm not going to go first because, as I've just said, my team's in flux. Jules, do you want to tell us where your team's at?
Yeah, I've got only one change compared to the squad that we mentioned last week, and that's Javi Elliott. I think he's been outstanding in this preseason with Liverpool. I know there's a lot of players in this Liverpool squad for Arne Slot to pick for the midfield three, and you just don't know right now. Nobody knows. McAllister's just come back from his holidays. We saw Szoboszlai starting against Arsenal, but then Gravenberch started against United. But Jones and Elliot were both starting in those two games. And I thought Elliot, especially against Arsenal, was outstanding. And already last season, we saw how good he was in very different position, in a slightly different style of football on the club than what we will see on the slot. So for me, he will start the season. I'm pretty certain that he will start as a starter the season for Liverpool. And he looked in great form. And he's at 5.5 million. Is still much cheaper than a lot of the other options that you might have in midfield. So I was like you, Kelly. I didn't really have I was thinking about Darwin and had Darwin in, but Darwin is a bit in and out, really.
So have you still got Darwin last week, didn't you?
But I was going to come to Darwin because I really want Niklas Füllkrug. So I'm just waiting to see how much he will cost. But right now, you don't know, he's not in the game.
You're that excited about him already, Jules?
Yeah, because I think unless he's like...
What would you need him to be to get him in your team?
I don't know. So I understand that he's a German international, Champions League finalist. Also, it's not like me going into the game and, you know, costing 4 million. I get that. But he's also unproven in the Premier League. Yeah. He's also quite old now. And so there's a pros and cons, no doubt. So I would hope for a decent price. And then I think I would bring him in because what West Ham are building, certainly attacking wise, with Somerville, with Pack. Imagine a Füllkrug, then below him, behind him, Bowen, Kudus, Somerville, and then even Paqueta behind that with Alvarez, with fullbacks that could be decent. Emerson is a great crosser of the ball. I think Füllkrug could have an absolute blast in the Premier League this season for West Ham. So I would bring him in if he's not too expensive, for sure.
To be fair, one player that I won't have come the start of the season will be Havertz. I've got rid of him and I've bought in Watkins at the moment, but I can't afford to have Watkins, Haaland, and who's my third striker? Isak, of course, and Salah. So I'll probably have to, I'm not saying I'll look there, Jules, but I'm looking for a third striker.
No, you should
as well.
Look there. Yeah. I think Füllkrug could be a great choice.
I think Elliot's a very interesting choice as well because you're committed to going with no Salah, aren't you?
Yeah, I would love him, but I can't afford him. So
just scares me starting without him. Sam, still got Saarland? That's what I'm going to start calling them, Saarland.
Nice.
I didn't even do that on purpose. I just can't speak. Have you still got Salah and Haaland?
Yes. Yeah. And the closer that the season draws, the more I'm certain that that's what I'm going to do. So I do have in my planner, I do have two drafts. The one that has Salah, which is the one that I'm currently on in the main app. And then I also have another one that has Jota instead of Salah. But I am pretty set, I think, on the Salah draft. That's the one that I'm constantly tinkering with. That's the one where I'm constantly moving players in and out. I just think that there's so many nice options in the cheaper price points that you can utilise to have Salah that I want to start with both of them.
Okay. How's the rest of your team looking?
I think I'm stabilising now, to be honest. I'm making fewer changes every week. I've changed Gehi out for Anderson because I just wanted to have the security of game week one and then moving into the season knowing that he's going to be there, whereas Gehi, obviously, really late coming back from international football with England. And the fact that Kulusevski is still playing in the number nine has meant that I've swapped Brandon Johnson out for him because unless Spurs do sign a number nine in the next couple of weeks, it looks like Kulusevski is going to start there. So if he's going to start as an out of position number nine for Spurs, then I'm going to go with him to start the season. His relationship with Sonny has been really nice. The link up play between the two of them, they're constantly changing positions from the left and into the centre. So at the moment, I've done that. Everything else is pretty much as it was last time. The team, if I don't go for Salah, obviously changes dramatically, but I just can't see me using that other draft.
Okay, just in case this is the first podcast people have listened to this season, firstly, where have you been? Secondly, we'll let you off because it has been holidays and the off season. You've probably been watching the Olympics. But let's just run through your full team, Jules, because people might not know who you had in before.
Yeah, so Flecken Areola in goal. Then in defence, Pedro Porro, Valentin Barco, Saliba, Konsa and Davis. Obviously, the GOAT at Ipswich. Then in midfield, Saka, Kudus, Gordon, Elliot now instead of Nkunku. and Oscar Bob. That gave me, by the way, 1 million in the bank. You said keep money in the bank. So here we go. And then up front right now, Darwin, Haaland and Isak, but full crook potentially being able to come in at some point for Darwin.
Okay. Go on then, Sam.
So Raya and Turner in goal, Vardiol, Anderson, Konsa, Howard Bellis and Davis. And then in midfield, Salah, Eze, Kulusevski, Nkunku and Winks. Up top, Haaland, Isak and Muniz.
Okay, this is where I'm at, but as I said, mine is very, very changeable. Flecken and Areola in goal. My defence is Konsa, Barso, Gehi, Vardiol, Taylor. You may notice that I've got rid of, I haven't got an Arsenal defender in there at the moment. That's also what I would somehow like to get in, but trying to get Salah into a team. And also when I brought in Guardiola, I've now got to upgrade to get another 6 million defender. Not sure how I'm going to do that. Saka and Kunku, and Kunku's going to go. Eze, I'm going to have to downgrade him to a 6.5. Winks and Gordon, Isak, Haaland and Watkins. So yeah, lots to be done with my team. Lots of decisions to be made, as I'm sure it is for everyone listening as well. Okay then, let's pick up where we left off the conversation last week, because I'm very aware that we've over-chatted so far a lot on this pod and not got through all of the things that we wanted to. But we did talk about fixture runs and how the fact that you can roll your transfers up to 5 transfers for this season, we're probably going to want to save them up and use them to kind of have a bit of a mini wild card, so to speak. And we can also target fixture runs. Sam, run us through the opening 6 weeks of fixtures sorted by difficulty and who you think has the nicest run of fixtures that we should be targeting.
So Fulham sit top of the fixture ticker for the opening 6 game weeks. Really nice opening block of fixtures. All right, it's Manchester United in the opening game on Friday evening next week. But then after that, Leicester, Ipswich, West Ham, Newcastle and Nottingham Forest. So a nice run of fixtures for them. Could easily result in clean sheets because we know historically they've been good at that. Even when they don't keep a clean sheet, Leno does tend to pick up additional points as well. So if you do want to go for a goalkeeper, he looks like a really nice pick, and particularly after 6 weeks, that's when people tend to start wanting to think about wild cards. If you can target in on teams that have got nice runs up until that point, that puts you in a nice position. So Fulham looking like decent options, and then it's Liverpool next, which is why the Salah conversation is so interesting, because they've obviously got Ipswich on the opening weekend of the season, and then after that the fixture run continues to be nice with Brentford, Manchester United, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth and Wolves. So should be plenty of goals in there for Liverpool. And I think managers like you guys who don't start the season with Salah, unless you've picked the right other Liverpool player, and there will be other Liverpool players that you can go with, whether it's a Darwin or a Jota or a Harvey Elliott or whoever it is, a Boslai, you might be then struggling to find a way to get them in. So I think looking for a Liverpool player makes a lot of sense. And then Crystal Palace are right up there as well. So you can see why the defensive players and Eze are proving really popular at Palace, because really nice block of fixtures for them. It's only really the Chelsea game in game week 3 for them that looks really difficult in those opening fixtures. But then if Chelsea's form doesn't improve, as we've seen in pre-season, they've not been great, maybe that game's not as difficult as it looks on the ticker.
Fulham are interesting. You mentioned Smith Rowe. He's very much on my radar now.
Yeah, he had a good debut the other day. He scored as well. I think he looked very excited to be able to play after, I think, what we could describe are 2 very frustrating seasons between the injuries and the lack of game time, really, for someone who has clearly showed before in the past that he was really good, certainly with a great potential. So he's 5.5 million, again, in that bracket, slightly less than some of the other in that 6.5 bracket. He's right now owned by 4.4% of the managers, which means, Kelly, that 4-point-something ownership that a lot of people like you have not just thinking about him, but already thought he could be a good differential at that price. You don't take much risk, really, 5.5. You go for it. If you want to leave him on your bench, you can. But 4% for somebody who's just changed clubs, because nobody would have had him before when he was still an Arsenal player. So it's because I think a lot of people believe he can have a good impact in that Fulham team, like as we've been saying, has really good fixture coming, starting the season with. And then going forwards, he might bring something a little bit different, him and Muniz, some of those attacking fluidity. So yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation.
It's an interesting conversation, but I don't think I will actually be bold enough to go there.
Who's your worst midfielder?
Harry Winks, but he's a million cheaper.
Okay.
And he's only going to sit on my bench. So, and that million, as we've talked about.
But I can see why people are tempted by 5.5.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. If all of a sudden, if I did commit to not going with Salah, all of a sudden, I probably would quite like to upgrade a Harry Winks to an Emile Smith Rowe.
There's no way you're not going to go with Salah. Like, really? There's just no way this is not happening.
No, you're probably right. But seeing the Liverpool fixtures, and that's why I think it was so important to get into the fixture runs this week. We've mentioned Fulham. The fact that Liverpool are second, they're the only in the top four teams, Fulham, Liverpool, Crystal Palace, Southampton. Liverpool there stand out. You going into game week one without a Liverpool player.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be Salah though. Don't forget, this is not Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool anymore. This is not based and built all around Mo Salah anymore. It's not like that. And we've seen
So is Harvey Elliott the best option?
No. I think it's the best option is the option that you want. So yeah, it could be Salah. And for Sam, Salah
is the best option.
I just think that this is going to be a different Liverpool. And Salah might still be, at the end, the best player in that team and the most efficient and the top goal scorer and the top anything you want, maybe. I'm just saying, a bit like for the Cole Palmer discussion that we had last week and the week before, it's a different manager. This Chelsea team is not going to be built around Palmer like Pochettino did. Just give him the ball and he's going to do his thing. This one, again, in the end, Palmer might still have a great season, but it will be different. And this Liverpool team will be different too, obviously. I'm just saying that, yes, if you can have Salah and you really want Salah, go for him. But there's other options that can also be very good under Arne Slot, from Darwin to Luis Diaz to Jones and Szoboszlai and Elliot in midfield to a defender. Maybe Trent will have a great season because Slot will rely heavily on him on that right-hand side. There's a lot of things again. So I know we all want Salah, but we can't all have Salah to start with.
Yeah.
And two, I don't think he'd be the end of the world because I do believe that it will be a different Liverpool team and certainly not too centered around him like we used to see before on the club.
I think what also scares me, it's the question that I think I asked Sam in the last podcast, the one before, where at this stage of the season, it's about playing it safe, isn't it? Because can you imagine if Salah gets a hat-trick on the opening day, you've captained him, you're already however many points behind. That's, I think, what scares me. And it's harder to get to him than it is to get away from him.
No, very, very true. Very true.
Sam, you're sitting there kind of...
I mean, she doesn't have that issue, obviously. Look, she's so smug in the way she looks at us. Like,
I don't think she is, because I think she was accepting. People on YouTube will be able to see. Sam was very accepting of everything Jules was saying.
She wasn't. She was looking, saying, yeah.
She wasn't looking at this, but I was just waiting for her to go, but...
But Jules, I fully agree with everything you've just said. Like, and I've had drafts of my team where I've had Szoboszlai in there. I've got a draft that I've got Jota in instead.
Is that the problem though, Sam, that we don't know which other player to go to, whereas it feels like Salah is safe? Because I would love to go for Jota. I've had some great times, not literally with Jota, but you know what I mean? Like having Jota in my team.
Life. We don't know.
No, having Jota in my team. Jota's such a fun player to own. Yeah. But it feels like with players like him, you have to own them at the right time. You have to get on and off often at the right time. Whereas Salah,
he's a streaky
you don't
player,
really get on and off
sure.
as much. Yeah, it's streaky. Yeah. That's the, yeah.
I just think that what you said at the end there, Kelly, for me is the key. It's there will be another Liverpool player or two or three that end up being decent options for much, much cheaper price than Salah is. But I don't yet know who they are. We've not seen the consistency of starts yet because Slot's tenure at Liverpool has started with half of his players disappearing for masses of time on their international duties and only just coming back. So he's only had Jota for a couple of matches so far. Darwin's only just back. He's only just getting Gakpo back. There's a lot of players that he's still got to use, and they've only got one preseason match left to go. So understanding the best team and how he's going to set up for that Ipswich game feels difficult. So in my head, I know I want Liverpool because they're sitting high on the fixture ticker. I'm expecting them to have a good season. I'm expecting them to be very attacking. So I want to have invested in them, particularly for this run of fixtures at the beginning. The only player I feel really secure about investing in is Salah. And so because of that, my thinking is, well, I'll have Salah for the beginning, knowing that I can get any other Liverpool player if I've gone to Salah. And it's relatively easy because I can just swap Salah for Jota, swap Salah for, I mean, if it's Harvey Elliott, then even better because the budget is absolutely massive then to spend elsewhere. And I would rather have that position than have a Szoboszlai in my team. And then Salah kicks off in game week one, gets a hat trick and looks phenomenal. And then I'm trying to find the budget to get Szoboszlai up to Salah. That's much harder than coming the other way. So in my mind, I like to have the most expensive player possible if they're from a team that I really know I want to invest in, because it's so easy to move him afterwards, but it's so much more difficult to try and go the other way unless you leave 6 million in the bank. And if you're going to do that, what's the point? You might as well just have them in the first place.
I tell you then, let's rank Liverpool players. So we all agree that Salah is number one. Who would be the second best Liverpool pick, Jules?
That's a good question. I mean, Feyenoord were really good defensively on the slot because they were also in the league where they had a lot of the ball and they were just so good at putting the opposition team under pressure and pressing them that there's a lot of teams in the Eredivisie against Feyenoord who hardly attacked anywhere. So you could go for Alisson because you could anticipate that Liverpool will be still very strong defensively on the slot because that's also what he does. If you don't believe that, or if you believe, okay, the Premier League is such a, is the best league in the world, so it's so different to what maybe he could have done defensively in the Netherlands, I completely understand. Let's forget about Alisson, but I think Alisson could well be there. And when you see the fixtures, you can easily see Liverpool keeping maybe five clean sheets out of those first six games easily. So maybe defensively, there's a reflection to have where maybe you can go for Alisson or you can go for one of the defenders. And it's, again, difficult because Konate was on holidays, Trent has been on holidays. So again, to go back to Sam's very good point, we're still not sure really what team is going to start that first game against Ipswich, apart from a few names there and there. So if you just look at the starters, Salah will start, guaranteed. Elliot and Jones, for me, are going to start, and probably Szoboszlai, very likely Szoboszlai to it. So the midfield three would be there. And then Jota started the last two games. I see no reasons why Jota would not start the next friendly, which is the last one, and then that first game of the Premier League against Ipswich. So I would say after Salah, personally, I would go for Elliot as the most important.
Sam?
Jota.
Okay.
I think so. I think he'll probably play up top in that first game.
I agree.
So we've kind of discussed Fulham, a bit of Fulham, a bit of Liverpool. Crystal Palace are interesting, though, aren't they, Sam? I think that's why we're seeing Eze picked in so many drafts. Like I said, he's 7 million, so for me, he might have to go as part of my sacrifice to get Salah in. I don't want him to go, but go on, tell me why I shouldn't get rid of him.
I wouldn't want to get rid of him. The fixtures are really nice. With Elise gone, would expect him to kind of step up and take a more talismanic approach to that team. And I think, you know, we've seen that in Crystal Palace teams in seasons gone by, haven't we? First with Zaha and now probably with Eze. The only negative, I think, is the fact that Mateta is off at the Olympics still and obviously isn't likely to be around for game week one. That puts him off a little bit. But those fixtures are nice far beyond the Crystal Palace opening, you know, game where we may or not may not have Mateta back. So I think for me, he's a player that he's been in every draft and I have pretty much locked him in and I can't see any reason not to have him. And I think at 7 million, he feels like a bit of a bargain as well because you've got to pay an extra 0.5 to have Mateta in your team over him. So yeah, I'd like to sit here, Kels, and say, oh yeah, you can definitely go with that. But in my view, I think he's one of the players that feels pretty key to have.
Might be poor Anthony Gordon that goes then. Poor lad. Had a tough Euros not playing much. And now he's not going to make it into my team. Jules, have you got any Palace?
No, I don't. I was looking at Ismail Assar last night I know your favourite ex, your boy from Watford.
The one thing I would say, Jules, though, is with him is when he's good, he is so good. You may remember when Watford beat Liverpool the season they went down and the season Liverpool won the league. He's the best player. He could play for a top Premier League club, but he's in and out. Mm. And I would wait a little while how he settles.
Just saying that he's the one who's replacing Olise, you know, on the pitch, same position, different player, obviously, you know, right foot against left foot, etc., blah blah blah. But he's the one that they chose to replace Olise after his departure. And yeah, you're right. He's very inconsistent. But we've seen that before with Olise, Mateta and Eze, to be fair, until they hit this incredible run of form at the end of last season where they were just all of them, especially Olise and Mateta, walking on water. So if you're tempted by Palace and you can't afford, for example, 7 million for Eze or 7.5 for Mateta, there's Sarr there at 6 million. I mean, there's Jordan Ayew too, if you want, as a player that is there somewhere and an enabler in your squad that will get some minutes because he's a decent player. So there's other options than just Eze and Mateta, but I agree with you, Eze especially, because Mateta, we don't know when he's going to be back. With Eze, you know he's going to start the season and you know that a lot of what this team is going to do with the ball going forward would be around him or built around him.
So Palace's fixtures are Brentford, West Ham, then Chelsea, Leicester, Man United, Everton. Do you see quite a few clean sheets as well, Sam? You've gone for Anderson. I've currently got Gaye, but that will probably change.
Yeah, I had Gaye in all of my picks until this week, and I've swapped over to Anderson just because of the late return for Gaye. And I really like those fixtures. I think there's definitely potential for clean sheets in there. Crystal Palace were solid at the back end of last season, so I'm expecting some clean sheets. There are also some tough fixtures where I could see, like, you know, we've spoken about West Ham and the signings that they've made. I could easily see them scoring in that one. But I think those opening fixtures look like there should be some clean sheets in there for Palace. And, you know, we see some attacking threat from players like Anderson as well. So I think had we had things like clearances, blocks and interceptions getting us a fancy points this season, then Gaye, he would have been the obvious choice. But when you're looking at the Palace team, the more attacking one of those two is Anderson. And obviously, if you can afford a little bit more, then you can go up to a Munoz. And
yeah, Munoz is a good shot. Munoz is a good shot, 5 million. Really good.
But you've got to have
right
five.
Yeah, you need five.
Yeah.
Something else that you've taken a look at, Sam, is the best fixture runs per club between game week 1 and 19, which is, of course, the final game week of this calendar year, if we're going to separate the season into two halves. Why is this so important? How does this help you when you're planning your team?
So I think when you first look at the fixture ticker, it can feel a bit overwhelming sometimes because obviously you've got 20 teams and 38 sets of fixtures and it is just a kind of a mosaic of colours, I suppose. And it's quite difficult to then look at where things go. So one of the things I like to do is chunk it down to Christmas and the end of this calendar year. So I'm just looking at the opening set of 19 fixtures, because after that, we get our second wild card anyway. So if things massively change, you just wild card at that point. So once I've got it to 19 fixtures, then I like to look for blocks of really nice fixtures for each club, because then I know in the back of my head that, you know, Arsenal have got a really nice fixture run, for example, between game week 12 and game week 19. So at that point, I want to make sure that I'm heavily invested in the red side of North London. And knowing that means that I can then start to think about how I might set up my team at different stages of this season. And I think that's even more important than ever with the fact that we can roll these five transfers now, because it's putting us in a position where we can say, okay, I'm going to need to be three Arsenal players by game week 12. How am I going to make sure that I've got the ability to get there? Because with an Arsenal player, it's not so easy to get them because of their price points. You're going to have to really think about and maybe move budget between positions. And so knowing that I want three Arsenal by the time I hit game week 12 is important. And, you know, there are some other fixtures, particularly when you're looking at enablers, that you want to look at where are the nice fixture runs. Well, Palace, who we've just been speaking about, for example, their fixture run that's really nice runs from game week 1 all the way through to game week 14. And yes, there are a couple of matches in there that are difficult. There's a game against Villa, for example, and there's a game against Liverpool. But fundamentally, if you've got a 4.5 rotating defender from Palace, you know that you've got them right the way through to 14 and you don't have to do anything about it. So that's, for me, the reason why I like to chunk it up and just look at each team individually. Where's their nice block and how do I want to invest by that point so that I can start to have some plans? Of course, those plans change because form and all of that stuff, injuries. But knowing roughly where they come sometimes also makes it easier if you've got to leave a player out that you really want. So like I really want to have an Arsenal defender, and apart from Rea, I just can't. So knowing that I don't have to have one necessarily until we hit game week 12 maybe makes me feel a little bit better about the decision not to have them from the start of the season when they sit quite low on the ticker.
Jules, I'm sure you've been looking at this much.
That's what I do every summer for the last 10 years. I've done those blocks of fixtures, you know, so I know when to change my stuff. So this is really nothing new to me, obviously.
Should we move on?
Should we move on? The only thing I would say, because Sam put... Thank you very much, Sam. This is really helpful. No, it's really helpful for everyone.
Yeah,
it's a shame that none of the listeners will ever have this under their eyes, but we do, so it's good. No, I'm kidding. We will keep updating people. There's Aston Villa there, and between game week 3 and 9, really good. Don't forget as well that for a team like Villa, for example, Champions League is going to kick on. Champions League will start pretty much around that game week 3. There's international break really early in September too. And then after that, it's the Champions League. And as we saw with Brighton, for example, last season in the Europa League, which they really struggled to deal with the two competitions, the Thursday, Sunday, schedule, there was injuries, it was all new to them. I think there was a lot of excitement. They would be the same for Villa. And Villa might cope better and they have more depth in their squad, all of that, of course. And Unai Emery is certainly more used to playing in Europe than De Zerbi was last season with Brighton. So it's a different context. However, when you look at the future and those block of fixtures and when you build your squad, don't forget that for the big boys, it's no problem. They're used to it. But for a team like Villa, where this is all new, it might just bring something a little bit different. That might mean that when they play in Europe, they're all excited. And 3 days later in the Premier League, it's not the same. So just keep that in mind when you build your squad.
When you look at, if we go back to the opening 6 weeks of the fixture sorted by difficulty, Wolves are at the bottom, then Brentford. Then interestingly, Manchester City, Arsenal and Tottenham all have difficult runs. Does that come into our thinking or are they completely fixture-proof, Sam?
Well, and I think this is where the fixture ticker you have to kind of use your judgment on, because Arsenal, Man City and Spurs being right down the bottom there, it's massively skewed by the fact that they obviously have games against each other. So you've got a North London derby in there, you've got Arsenal playing Man City in there. And of course, as soon as you add a red fixture to the ticker, it pushes them right down. So you can have really nice fixtures in and around it, but the fact that you've got one or two matches that are difficult in that block of time is going to see them sit lower. So with Arsenal, for example, obviously there's games in there against Wolves, Brighton and Leicester, as well as those two difficult fixtures against Spurs and Man City. And actually, there's a game against Villa in there as well. So I think just because they've got difficult fixtures doesn't mean they're not going to score goals. So you've got a Saka in there, no problem, really, is it? And I think it's the same with attacking players from all of those sides. Maybe it's more of a challenge with the defensive ones, because is there likely to be a clean sheet in the game between Arsenal and Man City? Maybe not. Is there likely to be a clean sheet in the North London derby? Maybe not. But if you've got a Porro or, you know, a Gabriel or a Vardiol, they're just as likely to get an attacking return. So, yeah, I think those sorts of teams, you have to look at the ticker, work out how many you invest in, but it wouldn't put me off investing altogether, for sure.
Okay, so we've got just over a week to go until the start of the season. So I think we're all, especially if you're me, because you're going to know your team's miles away from where you want it to be, you're going to kind of be going through each position, working out who the best picks are. So we're going to go through each position now and say who we currently think the best picks are. Because we've heard Jules mention the likes of an Alisson as a good option for a goalkeeper. Maybe he'll pick him overall. Jules, let's start with keepers. Who are the best options? Also, you do have to bear in mind budget as well.
So I would go for Leno, because as we've been saying, Fulham have a really good fixture list to start the season. And then if I can have another one, it's Raya. I just think Arsenal would be, again, the best defence in the league.
Okay, Leno and Raya. Sam, for you?
Yeah, I had both of those two on my list. I think if you want a budget, then Leno's really nice. And I think if you've got the budget to spend on a premium one, then Raya. But I also think a shout out to Dean Henderson in Crystal Palace. I think he could be a really nice goalkeeper option. If you don't want to go for a Crystal Palace defender, I don't think I'd double up. But if you don't want a Crystal Palace defender because you've got a different set of rotating players, then go for Henderson in goal.
Of course, you do need a little bit more money. So at the moment, Jules, you and I are both on Flecken and Areola, for example, two 4.5 keepers. Leno's 5 million, Raya's 5.5. So you'd have to find a whole 1.5 million if you were going to get to them. And that's kind of one of the perils of being an FPL manager, having to kind of try and spread out that budget and make your decisions. So yeah, often goalkeepers are where we often kind of, I don't know, shave off some money, aren't they? Would you say that you've got the two? Are you happy with those two as your best two 4.5s, Jules?
Yeah, I think so. If I try to go for Leno, then you need just a 4 million goalkeeper that's never going to play, which I don't really like to do. And if you look at Brent, as we said, Brentford have tough fixtures and West Ham have quite difficult ones too, but it looks like they could alternate quite well. When one has a really tough game, the other one is a more decent game. So I think Flecken and Areola could be a good pair.
Okay, defenders then, best picks.
Well, again, it's going to depend, isn't it, slightly on how much budget that you've got. I think going for Vardiol would be my choice in terms of the premium defenders, and then your pick of Saliba or Gabriel, whoever you prefer. If you're struggling for budget, then I'm massively coming around to the idea of Mikalenko at the back as well. Like, I think
I'm pretty sure that, or was it Branthwaite? When I mentioned Everton defender the other week, I got.
Yeah, you did, because I think I'm not
shot down.
I'm not hugely keen on spending a lot of money on Branthwaite or Pickford because I think that there are better players in their price point. But I'm coming around to the idea of Mikalenko at 4.5. I think the fixtures are nice for Everton, and defensively, Sean Dyche's teams usually are good defensively. And so I'm sort of coming around to the idea of him. I've got Anderson in there as well, and obviously my favourite in Davis. I think he's a really, really nice budget enabler. And after those first 2 weeks, Ipswich's fixtures are nice. Got Porro and Munoz as my mid-priced picks.
Okay, Jules?
Saliba, obviously, best player in the world, best defender in the world. And then Gvardiol. I think Gvardiol is the, of all the pick, regardless of budget, Gvardiol is the outstanding defender, really. Behind Saliba, yeah. After Saliba.
Yeah, I agree. Is he behind Saliba?
Yeah, come on. Let's be serious here.
Behind Saliba?
Sam, if you can only have one of them.
Paris born and bred. Saliba is everything more than Gvardiol.
Sam, you don't support either team. Who's the better pick of those two if you can only go for one?
Look, I love Saliba. I had him for every single game week last season, and I hate the idea of my team without him. Every time I look at it, I'm like, it doesn't have Saliba. However, I just think that Vardiol's attacking threat puts him above Saliba in terms of FPL picks. I'm not saying in terms of like footballing ability or who's the best player, but in terms of FPL picks, I think Vardiol just tops Saliba just on the attacking threat that he brings.
Okay. I'm going to not let Jules have a reply.
No, that's fine.
I'm doing that thing again when we're at the end of the podcast.
I don't know what's
on. That's good. You're saving me time. We're at the end of the podcast. I'm going to get in trouble for not moving it on. So best midfielders. Who went first last time? Sam did. Jules, you go.
I think it's difficult because it depends a lot of what kind of player you like and what style you want. So Salah, yes, of course, Salah, outstanding, no problem. I went for Foden though, because I do think that last season was such an incredible one from.
Can he do it again?
Exactly. I think so. And I think this season will be the confirmation of that. But again, he had the Euros where he did okay. Let's put it that way, to be kind to him. So that means, delayed when he comes back for pre-season, which was obviously not the case last season.
With his Euros, though, did you not think... So there was one point, I think it was in the semi-final, where I sat there and I realised he'd had one ruled out for VAR. Yeah. He'd had one off the line. Yeah. In one game, there was a fantastic save, and he'd also hit the bar. Yeah. He was still creating, yeah, and he was still looking for goal in a team that was at times struggling, well, throughout pretty much, struggling to create opportunities. So he still had a pretty good Euros, definitely, didn't he, I suppose?
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of considering what was going on around,
absolutely,
him, is more what I mean.
And he was not probably put in the best position and environment either. So I think Foden, for me, because he's cheaper than Salah, because he's still, I can't believe he's the same price as Palmer, pretty much, where they, for me, he's way ahead of Palmer in his own development and his own level. And yes, he's a bit older, but still. So yeah, I would have Foden even ahead of Salah.
Are we all agreeing now? You mentioned Palmer there. We haven't really mentioned him from the first podcast. Are we all agreeing that Palmer is now at his price point with that big price hike? I think we all had him on the first podcast, didn't we? None of us do now, Sam. Are we all agreeing can't afford him? He's one of the sacrifices that we're having to make?
Yeah, I've not had him in a single draft yet because I think he's too expensive. And I think at 10.5, I just think that the way that Chelsea will play this season will be different. I don't think he's going to have this, like, give the ball to Palmer and off you go and do whatever you like stuff that we saw last season. I think we'll have a bit more certainty in where the Chelsea players play and a bit more structure. And that may or may not be good for Palmer and for his ability to get FPL points. And I just think for 10.5 million, he's a million more than Foden. That's significantly more, you know, in terms of the way that you spend the rest of your budget. He's more than Son, and he's had a fantastic preseason. He's more than Saka, who I would expect to have another great season at Arsenal. So yeah, for me, when you can have Nkunku for 5 million or 4 million rather less, that's, I just can't justify Palmer.
Go on then, who are your best midfielders?
I've got Salah, obviously, as the premium pick, and I put Sonny up there too because he's been having a really nice pre-season for Spurs. In the middle, I've got Eze, who I just think is a bit of a kind of no-brainer, really, for his price point. And then I've put Maddison in there alongside Kulusevski. Maddison, if we'd have had the bonus point system last season, Maddison is the player who would have benefited the most and would have got more bonus points as a result of it, even though he missed chunks of last season through injury. So with the way that he plays, he will win fouls, he will have shots on target, he will take set pieces. All of this stuff is going to be beneficial in the bonus point system. So if you are trying to play that as a system, then he could be a nice option. And then just a little shout out to Jacob Murphy, who has been phenomenal in preseason. He's had 7 goal involvements so far and he's 5.5. So if you are looking for a cheap option, maybe he's there. Rodgers has also had a really good preseason at Aston Villa, and again in that sort of same price point. And then God love him, Harry Winks is coming up again, because I think if you are going for a system where
you
want a 4.5,
Harry Winks in the best midfield option, I mean, this has to stop, this Harry Winks loving.
Jules, but the thing is, it depends upon how you're defining best, doesn't it? So best in terms of the most likely to return points, or best in terms of...
Yeah.
I should have done a criteria here. I should have maybe said best best mid price, best. I don't think Sam is saying Harry Winks is in the best 5 midfielders in the league.
If you listen to the name that we mentioned so far, in all those categories,
blame the person that posed the question.
Well, no, because we've had Davis and those guys at the back.
Because you mentioned 5 defenders, but we were going to be like Saliba, Gvardiol, Foden, Salah.
Jules is a stickler for the rules, isn't he?
And maybe Harry Winks. You know Harry Winks, great player, amazing.
But maybe you need Harry Winks to have all of these other players.
And that's the point, isn't it? Is that, you know, you want Salah and Vardial and Saliba and all of these other guys that we want to have in our teams. Then you need somebody that you can rely on and is cheap and a nice enabler.
That's why he's there. That is very true. I was only kidding.
Oh, this is nice for us to almost end the podcast on an agreement. Doesn't happen very often.
Never.
Forwards, though, can't forget those. I think we're all set on Haaland and Isak, correct? In terms of them being the best two?
Yeah, and also Jules, Stewart, yes. I suppose. I think Stewart, 4.5 million, you know, great to have.
All right. He's not going to play. There's a big difference between him and Harry Winks.
He's literally opened his SPL app and gone on the cheapest.
How can I find the cheapest forward?
Okay, yeah.
He's literally, I could see him doing something. He's opened his app and he's gone on 4.5.
Wait a minute, I'll start throwing shots.
If you're not going to take this podcast seriously, Julien Leroy, we'll get someone else on next week.
Can we get Irvin back?
Yeah, come on then. So those are the top two, I'd guess. Who's going to be the third, Jules? Not any of those.
No. Watkins, maybe, obviously. I don't know if Ollie Watkins can have another season at 20 plus goals and 10 plus assists. Mm. I would love him to. I think the Champions League is going to take a lot of energy out of those Aston Villa players. And not just energy, everything. The focus, the excitement, everything. Physically, mentally, which is great for them. It's an amazing journey to go on. And this Champions League now, especially with the format, you play more games. So even better for them. But I do think that takes a lot away from you compared to the league. But yeah, I would say Watkins. I would say Watkins as well as Isak and Haaland.
But let's be realistic, Jules. How many people are going to be able to afford those three as their forwards? Like,
no.
Nobody.
I know, but that's not what we do. We're just saying the best pick.
Yeah, I know, but I just think that, like, in my mind, I agree on all of those three being great picks, but I just think that there's some such nice value picks as well. Like, Jao Pedro's back in training. I think if he regularly starts, and that's the thing that we missed last season,
I don't think
is the
I
regular
understood
starts.
This game at all. I really went out prepared for it. I don't think I understood.
Should we blame? I'll tell you what, guys, we'll blame the question master. I should have been, because Jules, you both interpreted it in a different way. You've just picked your best 3 midfielders in the game.
The best midfield, yeah. Regardless of price.
Whereas Sam has tried to help out every manager.
Yeah, but then it's another show we need. I thought that was a quick fire. Okay, goalkeeper, bim, 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 defender. Instead,
it was meant to be quick fire. Blame me. We could have done a whole podcast just on that thing,
exactly.
Especially with your arguments.
Yeah, we could.
Do you know what? We haven't given producer Jesse a shout out. We need to give him one now because I'm getting messages to say, please, please hurry up.
Can I just talk about producer Jesse for a minute?
Producer Jesse, yeah, go.
Yeah, because last night he messaged me whilst he was setting up his first draft team. So he was having a go at Jules last week for not having done his
or
opened the app.
He was in France on holidays enjoying the Olympics.
And last night, he was building his draft. And then he sent me a draft and I was like, it's got no Haaland in it. And then 2 minutes later, he sent me a link to the Chelsea game in pre-season where Haaland scored a hat-trick. He was like, I need to do it all again, don't I? I was like, yes, Jesse, off you go.
He might cut that out because we're now over on time. Maybe he'll cut that out.
He's got to keep it.
Yeah.
And also a big shout out I wanted to say to this lovely family from Harrogate in England who are big fans of
this
show.
Yeah, this is good.
And of Talent Vision and Planning. So, you know, it was lovely.
No, explain how you know that.
You know, we were on the same tube together and we had a lovely chat and it was great. And yeah, they were a lovely family enjoying the Olympics. So I hope the your trip in Paris is still very good.
I'm sure they've got a lot better since they met you, Jules. Did you give them some FPL tips?
Yeah, a little bit. And they're going without, well, the little boy is going without Haaland, for example. You know, the Liverpool fans. I know. Said, that's brave, really brave.
Okay, well, shout out's complete. Jules, what Olympic sport have you got for us? People have been watching all this time to see one.
Well, like that's goodness. Sprinting, obviously, or athletics.
Yeah, the sprinting,
tonight.
I've got that. Slightly more.
Javelin,
why did I just do it?
Javelin. You know, okay. I can do the shot put if you want. Oh, I can do the high jump because, you know, me and Dick Fosbury were good friends. Like, this is not diving.
Right, we're going to end this just, here. Right.
You know, jumping.
Jesse's just messaged me saying, can you describe what he's doing? Because this doesn't work very well audio. So he's running a bit. The first one was hands going wild by.
Yeah,
this
like
really testing. I'm a reporter. I'm meant to be able to test, say what I see.
That's why you're not at the Olympics.
This is why you're not a commentator,
exactly.
Kelly.
Struggling.
Have you seen the technique on this guy?
Yeah,
he's kind of running with his arms up and down. Now he's going in slow-mo. That's him sprinting. Yeah. Do you javelin again? Javelin. Oh, he's forgotten how to throw a javelin.
No, because I did the footwork first, but you can't see it under the table.
The footwork, but I can't see his feet. Obviously. And then he tried to launch something from behind his arm. Yeah. Is that everything? Shot put's really in there under his shoulder. Yeah. He's really a bit too tight on the arm. Believe it or not, when I was at school, I did the shot put, Jules.
Like a lot of the listeners, when you watch the Olympics, you really believe you can do well in a lot of those sports. Obviously, you can't.
I think when you watch this back, you'll realise you can't.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, Sam, go on quickly.
No, just if you're listening to this as a podcast, just go and watch the last couple of minutes of this on YouTube because it's very difficult to explain.
I mean, this was impressive, I thought.
At least next time we record, he won't be at the Olympics anymore.
No.
When is the next show?
This is the last time, was it? Next week, the Olympics are over. You never know when the show is until the day before, but you'll be back in England, don't worry. You're going to be in England or
Jesse? I'll be in England for a bit.
Oh, what a privilege. Okay, I'm going to leave it here now because we've gone way, way over watching George? Who's George? Oh, gosh, I've lost my head. George has been doing multi-sports at the end of this podcast. Guys, remember to get your team sorted. You've got just over a week to go. George is running again. Let's just end it here. Thanks for listening. If you're watching, why on earth would you do it yourself? See you soon, guys.